I was carrying this travel router around with me, and I was essentially a mobile internet cafe at that point.
I remember that. I'm sitting at a slot machine and I start getting ding, 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 ding on my phone. And I'm like, okay, where's TK now? Looking around, where's TK now? There was actually a separate time where I was looking for you because, like, so the way we cruise, just for our listeners, we all go to dinner together. And then I would bring my family up to the room and we'd get our daughter to bed. And then I'd come back down and go to the casino like a degenerate that I am. And what I'd do is I'd get into the casino and I'd just look at my phone to see where the Wi-Fi is and if the signal was getting stronger or not. And then I'd use that as a way to find Tom. Welcome to Travel Stories with your hosts, Tom Kim and Trevor Mountcastle. This episode, we talk about everyday carry. Tom, this has been an episode that we have batted about almost since before the inception of the podcast.
Yeah, this episode is years in the making, it feels like.
It is, because just as you said just before we started recording, this is second nature for us. But the reality is as you so astutely pointed out, what's second nature for us might not be as intuitive for others. And to the same point, I would think that our listeners are going to probably have probably completely different takes on sort of the things that they think of as everyday carries as part of their travel kit. And so even right off the bat, before we get into our everyday carry tools, accessories, luggage, etc., I would really encourage our listeners, share what those things are that you keep with you that are always in your go bag, that are always, you know, with you when you get on a plane, when you travel overseas, when you travel down the street, maybe not down the street, but, you know, down the coast. And, you know, I think this is an opportunity for everybody to kind of learn, because there's so many different things that I know I don't know. And I'm always looking for how I can get more efficient in packing, how I can get more efficient in covering all the needs that I have.
I would say that, you know, as I do my browsing on YouTube or on the internet or whatever, and somebody has an everyday carry episode, you know, on, let's say, their YouTube channel or something, I like to watch those. And the funny thing is, I often disagree with them all the time. I'm like, why the hell would you do it that way? That being said, so, you know, travel is personal, and I think your gear is personal. So we will not be offended if you listen to what we do and say, you know, you guys are idiots and you don't know what the hell you're doing. It's okay. We're going to not take offense. However, I think both of us have been kind of doing this iterative thing where every time we travel, we think about, you know, at least I do, you know, like, hey, did I really make use of that thing? Or, you know, if I see somebody else doing something and I'm like, wow, that's a really cool gadget or something, I take note. And honestly, some of the things are things Trevor has done. You know, some of the things I'm like, oh, Trevor has this thing that I kind of like. I'm going to buy one of those. Or, you know, we look at some of our other friends in the miles and endpoints community, and, you know, you kind of observe what they do while they're traveling, and you pick up tips and you iterate and you improve your process. And you suddenly, every time you go traveling, you make slight changes to your go kit, right? And I kind of like the idea of us sharing a couple of our tips and tricks, because, you know, I would say we travel quite a bit and we probably have tweaked our go kit many, many times. I know I have, and I'm sure you have too, Trevor.
Oh, absolutely. It's funny. In fact, in preparation for this and a trip that I'm about to take, I actually swapped out from an old Costco backpack that I got on clearance that you've probably seen it, I don't know, dozens, maybe many dozens of times, to a random backpack that I just happened to find in the basement that we have from back when we used to resell backpacks for back to school. And as I'm going through, I used a sort of a Marie Kondo approach of, maybe not Marie Kondo, but, like, did I pronounce that right?
Sounds close enough.
Yeah, it's such an old fad.
You were trying to see if things were bringing you joy, apparently, right?
I was seeing if they still had utility. And I was just astonished. I mean, my old backpack, because I don't unpack everything, I had probably 10 or 15 pens. Now, they're all really nice pens. I mean, Park Hyatt pens, St. Regis pens and everything. But I don't need to be carrying those things around.
I have the same problem. I need to make sure to de-pen my backpack every once in a while.
It's funny because everybody's looking for a pen nowadays. And, you know, who knows? You got 10 in your travel backpack. But yeah, I actually wanted to go through that process because I felt that would really help this discussion. But I don't know if I'm getting too ahead of things. So you put together an agenda help me understand some of this, because we should have chatted about this before.
Well, you wanted to keep some of the spontaneity, right? And the authenticity, you know, you can't be too overly rehearsed, right?
Exactly. So I'm going off of some bullets here. Team Carry On, I think we are well documented.
Well established, I would say.
Well established. Yeah, I like that, of being Team Carry On. And in fact, I even ventured into the team checked bag, and I came back out. I came back to Carry On, even with a child. Right now, we travel with, our daughter doesn't have her own bag. She has her own backpack now at 3 years old, but we still put her clothes separated between our two bags. So we still are able to somehow do Team Carry On. I want to say we've done it for as many as 3 week trips.
Yeah, I think, you know, Team Carry On is definitely the area where I'm most comfortable. I have some non-carry on bags, but I bring them out like once or twice a year. Like, it's an infrequent use. And I'll tell you, for luggage, you know, my compliant roller carry on is probably my go-to. And that's probably going to be the first thing I think we should talk about is, let's talk about luggage, because, you know, that's probably one of the most important things you're going to need as part of your kit if you're going to travel anywhere. And yeah, I think finding the right roller bag is probably a pretty important thing. And I think we both are kind of on one particular team, aren't we?
We are, but I think we have to acknowledge the fact that this is a pretty tenuous, controversial. There we go.
Or is it a divisive almost? Is it almost a red-blue?
I don't want to say it's divisive.
Okay.
I want to say it's controversial.
Maybe it's kind of like your favorite football team, right?
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. And you know what? When you look at the amount of players on the field, it really is more football team-ish than a blue-green sort of thing. Because when you look at it, at the big scheme of things, right, you have the high-end luggage, and then you have the cheaper luggage that you use for a few years and then you toss sort of thing, because they just don't last. And you expect that. But then when you tease that back, I think at the higher end, you've got, you know, we're team Briggs and Riley.
Oh, you went ahead and said it, huh? You announced it.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I ruined it. I ruined the suspense. I think I'm well established as being a Briggs and Riley fanboy.
You will not get any arguments from me. I think we both root for the same team. Team Briggs and Riley for me too. I'm probably on my third Briggs and Riley carry on, not because any of them broke. It's just, you know, like one, I think I lent to somebody who never gave it back to me. They're never getting another suitcase of mine. One I gave to a friend of mine because I was upgrading. But I think I'm only down to about two Briggs and Riley Wheeler bags right now. But I am absolutely team Briggs and Riley. And let's just put it out there. The main reason for me is they have the absolute best warranty in the industry. I think I can say that pretty authoritatively. I don't think there's a better luggage manufacturer that has a lifetime warranty that is as liberal and no questions asked as Briggs and Riley.
Have you had to use it?
No, that's probably why they offer it, you know, because it's strangely enough, I would love to have had that same kind of warranty on my Tumi Alpha bag that I have, but the Tumi Alpha bag has already made one trip to the store. I have a feeling it will ultimately need another one, but the problem is at this point is it is not under warranty at all.
So I've sent two bags. So in our house, we have three rollers, one trunk style checked bag that's been used like one or two times. And those three rollers, two of which have gone back for service fairly recently. They both have at least a million flown miles. They've been to every continent except for Antarctica. And when we sent them in, the wheels were kind of jagged. The telescoping handle was in bad shape on both of them. And we got them back and they felt like new bags. They didn't refurb the outer area, like where we might have had a little bit of a scuff mark on the fabric.
Yeah, they're not going to fix cosmetic issues, but functional things like wheels and handles and stuff, they're going to fix.
So I'll give you an example. We bought a newer Torque. The Torque is probably only like 6-7 years old. The Torque is a hard body case versus our cases are international baseline or international wide body. They don't make them anymore. There's a specific name for it, but needless to say, it's like Tavallo or something, not making meals. And those cases, that style is not made anymore. But they're fantastic, and they still refurbish them. The Torque, which is newer, I can twirl around on a tile floor with one finger. When we got our two international wide bodies back, I could do the same.
Great.
And I could not do it before I don't think I could do it before, even when they were new.
Oh, really? So they made it better than new.
They did. They really did. And it's a tribute. And it's, I think, $39.95 round trip FedEx packaging or FedEx shipping up to, I think it's Hop Hog, New York. So, you know, sent them to almost my hometown and turned around in, I think, 2 or 3 weeks. They communicate fairly well. And it's just such an easy solution. I don't like to check our bags if we need to. I still try to avoid them doing that, but I can do it with confidence that my bag's never going to be totally destroyed. And I'll give you an example of of a time when a bag was destroyed. My parents got us Delsey suitcases. So now we're getting into the lower end. We'll circle back to the kind of higher end in a second. And we traveled a fair bit back and forth to Europe, a couple of other places with these Delsey suitcases. We had an opportunity to buy some, I think it was alcohol somewhere in Germany, or it was probably the UK. So we check a bag, might have checked them both, pull them off the conveyor. Nothing's leaking, thank God. Our honeymoon, we had a bag leaking, but it wasn't damaged. It was just poorly packed. As we're trying to roll it, this bag is like rolling, like it's clearly not rolling straight. We're effectively dragging it. I opened it up after we had emptied the bag out. I opened the inner lining, and the entirety of the plastic structure was shattered. It was almost like they had flash frozen the suitcase or just taken it out to, I don't know, Mike Tyson or something. Maybe Mike Tyson's a bad example after that Netflix thing. Oh, okay, fine. I was trying to go for a funny and for a joke.
I wasn't paying attention, sorry. Yeah.
It was lost. Okay. I didn't watch it anyway. I just saw the social
you
media.
You just see it all pixelated, I think, if you actually watched it. But anyway.
Fair. But needless to say, so I've had not the greatest experiences with the cheaper stuff. And so we really went for that Briggs & Riley. I know that one of our favorite movies, I think, was focused on, what was it, Travel Pro? Was that what Ryan Bingham had in Up
probably.
In the Air?
Probably. That's probably what they had. And, you know, a lot of the flight attendants have Travel Pro. I mean, I think that's kind of what the airlines issue them quite frequently, right? A lot of domestic airlines.
Yeah, unless you are an EVA Air flight attendant, because they get Rimowa.
Oh, Rimowa. You know, so another we've mentioned Briggs & Riley, we mentioned Tumi. Rimowa is probably another one that's in kind of their, that kind of the little bit more higher end side of the luggage. By the way, you can go crazy, by the way. I mean, you could be like Louis Vuitton or whatever, and Goyard or something, and you could, you know, we could be talking about stuff in the thousands of dollars, but, you know, for us, when we talk high end, I think we're talking about carry-on suitcases that are in the $400, $500, $600 range, right, is probably what we're talking about.
Yeah, I think I personally cap out at about that much, and the only reason I feel like I can cap out at that is because they are lifetime bags.
Well, you know, you're making an investment in something that literally you could pass down to somebody. I mean, to a family member or something, and somebody could actually get it 10 years later and be like, oh, I'm really happy to receive this item, because it's probably going to be a condition that's worth gifting.
In fact, you helped me gift a Briggs & Riley to my nephew, and I've advocated my brother to pick one up, and he has one and loves it.
Oh, good.
The other side, though, is we call this luggage, but you don't want to be dragging it around as a burden. I mean, any suitcase is going to be a little bit of a burden, but you think about the size of the wheels, some of the cheaper things. I've got family members, I won't name names, but they have these suitcases with these tiny little wheels, and sometimes they're not even balanced well. And so, like, they're trying to move, and they might already have mobility issues themselves, and they're trying to take these tiny little wheels, and it's just not working. I mean, you try to get out of the airport, and even sometimes in the airport where they have the tile carpets or the carpet tiles, little wheels don't work. Small little things make a really big difference in your experience. And that's not even getting out in the, you know, trying to go off road. And believe me, I've had to drag suitcases over dirt.
Yeah, Europe and cobblestone roads is probably another one where you'll be testing your luggage. I know that locals don't want to hear your luggage either, but, you know, anyway. I will say that I think for those of us in the Miles and Points community, we probably travel more than your average person. That's probably why we pay attention to these details a little bit more, because when you have to just do it once in a year, you're probably not going to care so much. When you have to drag that suitcase and it's not functioning at its maximum potential, you're going to notice it more, because you're doing it so many more times during the year. I'd say the other reason why I love my Briggs & Riley, and I did mention we were on Team Carry On, but, you know, I cheat on Team Carry On sometimes. You know, I check my bag sometimes. And Alaska Airlines is probably part of it. You know, they do have their, you know, on-time baggage guarantee, and I do tend to try to catch them not making their on-time baggage guarantee. That's kind of helped me out a little bit with my mileage plan balance. But I digress. The one downside I would say is, you know, I have actually invested in more than just a Briggs & Riley. I do have a Tumi, and I do have a Rimowa too, which you were in my presence when I bought that. Were you not?
Oh, yes. September of 2021 in Berlin.
In Germany, of all places, which is, you know, of course, the home place, the place where Rimowa originates from.
I have to ask.
Yeah?
Does it have any scuff marks yet?
No, because I never use it because I left. This is my problem with Rimowa. This is another thing that I wanted to share with the listeners because, you know, the problem with Rimowa is, you know, you spend $600, $700 on a piece of luggage and it looks so shiny and new. And if you ever want to check it, the minute you check it, I mean, this thing will not, I mean, some will say, you know, that's part of the character, right? You get a Rimowa suitcase. So it has all those scuff marks because those are kind of the badges of honor saying, hey, this thing has some mileage on it. And you're clearly well seasoned as a traveler, as your suitcase indicates. But yeah, I hardly ever use the thing.
It's like a new car.
Yeah, it's like, I know.
The first day.
I never think to use it. I never think to use it because I'm like, oh, I don't want this thing to get all scuffed up. So that is, and yet, you know, Rimowa, for all their things, you know, number one, I don't think Rimowa has quite a good warranty. Theirs is limited. I think it's like 5 years. Still pretty good, but you know.
They expanded it, I thought, compared to what it was ages ago. I had a chance to tour their factory in Toronto, and their argument was Briggs & Riley has a lifetime warranty.
Yeah.
We don't, but we build it like you won't need one.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, that's fine, but what about the airlines?
Yeah. Well, and you know, honestly, the difference is almost a little bit night and day, because as much as I love my Briggs & Riley, the wheels on a Rimowa are amazing. This thing glides through the airport. It is smooth. It is silky when you're pushing it through the terrazzo floor of my local airport here. I mean, the thing, I mean, you talk about finger. I push it with my one finger. It's probably gone like 10 feet down the hallway or something by the time, you know, I catch up with it.
Wheels matter.
Yeah, but you know, I don't know. I think the problem is I should have probably spent more money. I probably should have bought the metal one. And at least with that one, I feel like when you scuff it up and it's aluminum and something, yeah, it's probably a little bit more stylish than just having scratch marks on like blue plastic.
Yeah, but then you lose so much to the weight of the aluminum suitcase.
That's true. And then the other, that is the other side is, you know, aluminum is a lightweight metal, but compared to like nylon, you know, it's not.
Well, exactly. It's compared to nylon or polycarbonate.
Polycarbonate, yeah.
Yeah. So we can't leave luggage without addressing what seems to be at some point in the last, I'll say 5 or 6 years, a phenomenon. And that phenomenon, I haven't touched it. I've noticed it. I've observed it. And that phenomenon is away luggage.
I would agree. And more recently, there's another one that's kind of like in the same ballpark, which is Monos. I think that's another brand that's kind of, I've seen quite a bit more. They're both kind of in that same kind of like, they're very plain, but they're absolutely marketing and very, very, you see a lot of take up, you know, you see them gaining some market share.
Yeah. And their sort of discriminator is that they've got charging in it. Is that their primary discriminator or?
I think that might've been something where they started out to be smart luggage or whatever, but, you know, that was really a fad. You know, I think the whole, number one, you know, having a charger, number one, you have to have, nowadays have to have chargers, right, that can disconnect, right? There used to be a time when they were built in, they literally were attached, right?
Yeah, that doesn't fly nowadays, literally and figuratively.
Literally and figuratively, yes.
Any final thoughts on luggage or away or Monos?
No, other than, you know, I think there's a lot of good options out there. You know, I think the only thing that I'd share with listeners is, you know, if you are in the miles and points or you're aspiring to do more traveling, I think investing, though, in one of these kind of higher end brands, you'll find that it's probably worth it. It's a hard pill to swallow at the first because, you know, you're spending a lot of money on something that you could spend a lot less on. You could go out and spend $100 on a carry-on or $200 on a carry-on. But I would say that if you're going to do that, you're going to have to go back to that luggage store or mall or whatever and buy another one in a couple of years because these things will not last, especially if you're going to be using them as frequently as many of our friends in the community do, right? Because they really do take some major beatings, especially if you check them in.
I just have one last tip that came to me at the last moment.
What's that?
Costco Next often has discounts. I know on Briggs & Riley.
Yes.
And sometimes others. So that's, you know, if you're going to make the jump to go Briggs & Riley caliber, look at your options and where you can find discounts.
Yep.
Because discounts do exist out there.
Yep.
You just have to do a little bit of looking.
Costco's a good place. You know, and you know, for me, there's a reason why I bought my Rimmel in Germany, right? Not only because it's kind of cool to buy it in the country that originated it, but as a visitor, I definitely got my tax refund, right? For my VAT tax. And after that refund, actually, at least at the time of when I purchased it, now mind you, I haven't looked this year or in the recent memory, but there is sometimes an advantage to buy these things in other countries or other locations. And I think Rimowa is one of the ones where, for whatever reason, certain retailers had a much better price than elsewhere. And Rimowa is one of these companies, especially since LVMH took them over a couple of years ago, where they have a lot of discipline when it comes to retail pricing. So you're not going to see discounting on Rimowa in a lot of places. But one of the few places that I have seen it discounted is in Europe, especially when you consider that you can get the refund on the VAT tax.
Every little bit helps, especially when you look at the cost of these things.
Yep.
So let's move on. So we've talked luggage. You want to go to accessories next? I know this is one that just is.
I can tell you that there are some accessories that are in our show notes here that definitely, you know, if I don't have, like sometimes I'm carrying a backup because it matters that much to me. I've learned from experience.
You have a hot spare.
I do have a hot spare.
What is the first accessory that you keep a hot spare with you?
The thing that is so mission critical that I need to have fall tolerant equipment and infrastructure on my person. It has everything to do with airflow, with comfort and temperature. And this is, of course, a USB fan. Because I've actually, unfortunately, these things are not exactly the most reliable things. It takes only one spill off a table and your USB fan will be no more and will not work. So in some of these longer trips, especially to hotter climates or in premium classes on Asian carriers, I will say that essential equipment is a USB fan.
You know, it's funny because I just looked because I think the last USB fan that you got me took a spill off my desk when we were going through. So I had it on my desk right where we're recording this. And through the rather intemperate seasons of summer. And I had it right there. And then I think I was cleaning my desk a week or two ago and it took a spill. And I'm not sure if it still works, but those things are just, they're gold. They take up a little bit of space, probably what, 2 inches by like 4 or 5 inches square. But the amount of airlines just fly to Europe. How many airlines actually have airflow? I was running to make that Lufthansa 747 on our way home from Austria over Thanksgiving. It's not great to say. I'm sweating like a pig and I'm like, where's the airflow? There's no airflow. Like what I would have given for a fan. You know, it was so cold that I was like, oh, I don't need to worry about it. But I was regretting it. I needed one. I could have even dealt without the hot spare. But I mean, that is such an incredible accessory anywhere in the world that you are, because even if it's cold, they might have the heat up in some restaurant or something, and you need a little bit of that airflow.
We've had that in restaurants before where it's been, they clearly had the heat turned up way too high. And, you know, on planes that have air nozzles, you know, there are times where for whatever reason, whether they're not hooked up to the power or they have a problem with the APU or, you know, whatever, they may have air nozzles, but there's lots of times on the ground where you're sitting for extended periods of time with no airflow. And that does come in very handy.
I have to say the number one accessory or the number one tip that I feel like anybody that travels with you comes away from is, yeah, it might feel a little bulky to have a fan on you, but I mean, you'll sit down at a bar, you'll sit down in a lounge, you'll sit down at a restaurant, and you've got that fan and the wind's blowing through your hair and you're very comfortable. And the rest of us are like, oh my God, it's just way too warm here. What's going on? The stagnant air. And I know multiple people who now have fans because of you. Myself included. Okay. Myself included, because it is one of those things. I think it earns its way, even given the size, it earns its way into the everyday carry repertoire.
They're not very expensive. And, you know, like you said, you break it, just buy another one. It's like 10 bucks, you know, whatever. It's not going to bankrupt you if you have to buy a 2 or 3 of these things. Get them at Walmart. That's where some of the ones that I have are from, and they work. So, and like I said, it's a lifesaver, especially if you're 15 hours on a, you know, Cathay Pacific or a JAL flight or something. And, you know, again, no air nozzles in first class or business.
even flight attendants have commented on your fan, if I recall correctly.
A lot of people, you know, it's almost second nature that I get lots of compliments about my fans because people are like, oh, what a good idea. Oh, what a good idea. I have literally heard that so many times, whether I'm on a cruise, whether I'm at the airport, whether I'm in a restaurant, you know, whether it be staff members, people I'm traveling with, people I'm not traveling with, people just walking by. There are so many instances where people have been desirous of a nice fan. And I can tell you, I very much enjoyed having it at my disposal.
You have a fan base for your fans. That's just yes, fantastic.
I will giggle slightly at that comment.
So one thing that I've been toying around with fairly recently, and I'm a little torn because I need to figure out something new now that we've upgraded our iPhones to the 16, which no longer has the Lightning cable, is a 3-in-2 cable for charging phones. Historically, I've had this sort of rat's nest of cables because you need a USB-C cable. So we travel with two phones, a Google Fi, and we'll get to that, the cell phone situation in a bit. But I need to be able to charge a USB-C. I used to need to be able to charge, and I still need to be able to charge a Lightning cable output because of iPads and AirPods. And then I need to, you know, I've got the Apple Watch. And I was just traveling with so many different things. My travel charger looked like Medusa with all these cables coming out of it. And I said at one point, there's got to be a better way. And I think you had something that sort of started off with that sort of, you know, Hydra look of multiple cables coming off of one cable. And then I found one that had the Apple Watch adapter and the Lightning and the USB-C. It's not a specific brand. We'll include the link to the one that I use in the show notes. It's not the most fancy one. It doesn't show you how much amperage or anything like that. But I find that to be a whole lot cleaner when I travel. The reason that it's a 3-in-2 is because it includes an adapter. So it's a USB-C, and then it has an adapter that can go to USB-A, I guess, the older rectangular USB. And that sort of allows you to cover just about any receptacle that you can pull power from.
I would agree. You know, having one of those, although my friend Dion, who's an electrical engineer and actually did some work on USB stuff, would be like, oh, that's not a legal cable. Because there's some actual standards for USB. But no, I would agree that they definitely have these that you can buy for sale. You can get them on Amazon. I have one. And they do come in handy. It's nice to have one cable that has multiple connectors on it so that you don't have to, you can have fewer of them. Now, I tend to use it as a backup cable, right? So I'll have a purpose-built single, a Lightning only, USB-C only, or whatever. I have a couple of those in my accessory bag. But, you know, I would say it's definitely part of my kit. Having it is definitely, that's part of my kit too, is I typically will have multiple cables because I have been on too many trips where I've lost one or I've broken one. And to be, again, single threaded and have only one and not be fault tolerant and not have a backup, I think for especially a USB cable this day and age is probably another thing that you might want to think of because it's really not adding that much to the bulk of your stuff you're everyday carrying.
I think that's a really good point. I keep at least two redundant old cables that like won't do data transfer that I just got at like random trade shows. And then because my wife and I both travel together, we've got redundancy, like, you know, if one cable breaks, then we're just down to one rather than having to, you know, we can still operate with one functioning cable or, you know, and then the two backups, so to speak. So we have a little bit of a buffer, I think, that you probably don't because we are traveling together and I effectively have dual sets. You know, we have a dual stack. I've got everything that I have for my travel tech stack, so to speak, on the mobile devices. And
your player one and player two mode.
Exactly. And so I totally take your point. Redundancy is important, but where you can streamline things, taking one cable out at a lounge is a whole lot easier and cleaner than having to pull out like a rat's nest of cables.
It's true. Or on the plane, you know, being able to just have, you know, that's probably another tip, not exactly an accessory tip, but, you know, I tend to try to collect a couple things that I know I'm going to need. And they'll either go into, you know, another bag or someplace where I can reach them more easily and not in, you know, my case where I have all my other chargers and everything. That's another good tip is just to, you know, kind of curate your stuff so that you've got what you need for the mission at hand, which in some cases is being on the plane in coach, you know, which I know hold on. I can see Trevor's face. He's having a little bit of, he's like, what is that, coach? I don't understand. That sounds familiar.
No, I'm getting flashbacks. I'm getting flashbacks, but thankfully.
Oh, okay. No, or maybe it's PTSD. Maybe that's what it is.
Well, thankfully I'm getting flashbacks of our Japan Airlines flight to and from Manila, which wasn't so bad. It was not so bad.
That was probably the best coach experience that I can think of.
And that's what I try to remember when I think of coach. I mean, I try to just block out Southwest. So I think you really made a good point there about having things accessible to you. And I know that you, are we going to call it a man purse in the show? Or are we going to have to edit that out?
I'd say call it a man purse. I mean, it's a purse, okay? It's a purse. I'm a man. I got a man purse, okay? And you know what? If people want to, you know, say, hey, what's up, dude? Why do you got a purse? I'm going to say, well, you know what? I'm traveling and sometimes I need a purse. And a lot of times it's nice having a sling bag that's just big enough to hold, you know, your IDs and maybe a couple of key things like a 3-2 cable or a battery bank or your cell phone or, you know, those type of things that you're going to need on the plane.
And so what brand do you like? Because I have two actually myself, but what brand do you use?
I happen to need one. I've had several, but the one I've used is actually one, again, I was on a trip with you. We were at, speaking of the JAL flight from the Philippines, we bought it in the Philippines at a Japanese retailer called Muji. I think many of you may recognize that brand. They sell a bunch of different lifestyle things. And this one just happened to have man purse. And I was thinking, I need one of those right now. And that's where I bought it. And that's literally been the one I've been using for the last, 3-4 years now? And it's held up very well for something that wasn't very expensive. I think it was probably only like $20 or $30 at most. And, you know, I make great use of it.
And that was August 2022. And so it's still working really well for you.
Yeah, it really is. It's the right size.
So I break mine into two. So I originally had, and I don't mean anything by it, I align these names based on where I saw the style of bag most prevalent. I started out with a Kenneth Cole Reaction European man bag. If you look at how Europeans, at least for the last 6 or so years, men generally preferred kind of a rectangular bag that could like fit a tablet, you know, fit just a little bit more than the bare minimum that I think you had kind of talked about with your Muji man purse. And that worked really well for a while. But I kind of switched that in with a gift that you gave to me. I think it was for my birthday, a Bellroy. And I call that an Asia man bag because it's that kind of more narrow, similar to your Muji, where you can fit your passports, your phones, and maybe a cable or maybe something else small. For me, it's probably not even a foot long and probably about four to six inches wide, probably less than 6 inches. Well,
it can be kept kind of like at diagonally, you know, across your
exactly.
chest or at your hip. And that's a little safer because, you know, if you're in a situation where you want to protect your items, right, it's nice to have them a bit more at your core, right, rather than, you know, kind of at your extremity where somebody could snatch it more easily or do something. And yeah, I think the European man bag, I definitely think are the ones that are meant to be kept more kind of in, for lack of a better word, portrait instead of landscape mode, right, in terms, you know, up and down, it feels like.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking like the Indiana Jones bag, really. Right. That's right. What the European man bag style is. And I think both have their place. I feel much more secure with the Bellroy, you know, what I'm referring to as the Asia man bag. Even in Europe, I just feel like there's a vibe where you just want to have it close to your chest. You want to have it in front of you. It just sort of feels a little bit more secure that way. And after my experience, I can't remember what episode we talked about where I'd been pickpocketed, thankfully got the phone back. I'm much more sensitive to that now than I used to be.
Agreed. I think especially if you're in Spain or something like that, it's probably better to not make yourself a target. And one of the ways you do that is pick your accessories well, including your man purses. So, you know, have the ones that are a little, that you can carry a little bit closer, a little bit more safely and securely and snugly so that you don't become the target of somebody trying to do something to you.
So talking more on small bags and electronics, because we sort of talked a bit on the electronic cables and stuff, what do you use to keep your chargers and charger cables together?
That is something that my favorite and the thing that I use currently and that I will probably continue to use for quite some time is I use a Lufthansa First Class Amenity Kit. By the way, drink everyone. Clink, clink. And these were, I think, actually a previous generation. I don't think it's the current generation. I use these Lufthansa, I think it's Braun Brufel or something. I don't exactly know the brand, but they're just the perfect size. They're made of this lovely ballistic nylon. They've got a very sturdy zipper, some leather accents that aren't the crappy fake kind that flake off after a year or two. It's just, it speaks quality, and it's the perfect size to put my chargers and my cable. So, and it's also a very bright color, which I think is also very helpful. I have one that's, I think, green, a very bright green, a very bright orange. I had one that was a very nice bright blue, but that was stolen in one of my book bags. Speaking of Spain.
Oh, yes. Barcelona.
Speaking of Barcelona and Spain and theft. So I fortunately have a couple of these to my name, and they are getting used, or they will continue to probably be my go-to for my chargers and cables and things. And so, again, PSA, first class amenity kits and business class amenity kits, they're not only just for, you know, looking pretty on your shelf, you can actually use them. They actually can get used.
Yeah, we use ours. So I don't use anything for the electronics. I probably should think about it, but I just kind of toss them in and fit them into the spots that I have. But we use an old Porsche amenity kit from our first Lufthansa A380 experience, first Lufthansa first experience period, way back probably over 10 years ago. And it stands up really well. We use it for all of our daughter's things. We have a travel kit that we keep with us that has children's Zyrtec, children's Tylenol. I think we've got children's Benadryl, although we never use it. And then just a couple of other random things, nail clippers, that sort of thing. And so the Lufthansa first class amenity kit is just the perfect size to be able to just put all that stuff in, throw some Aquaphor, whatever else you need in there, and everything's in one single place. And if we need to do a rush to try to find something because one thing happened or another, it's just grab that one bag. We know where it is. We know what to expect, and we can just run with it. And so, you know, these first class amenity kits and even business class amenity kits, so much more potential that we can give them than just sitting on our shelves or in our closets.
I would say one of the advantages with using those things are compartmentalization. And I think that's really key because, you know, if you have to search, you know, having a big bag with 20 or 40 different items in it versus having two bags that are separated from a task perspective, major, major difference in how you pack, how you can pack up, how you can be on the go and organize yourself so that you're not spending hopefully as much time getting prepped and having to pack and unpack. That's probably a good segue to talk about another thing I think most people probably know about, but you know, if you haven't used them, it's probably a good segue to talk about what? Packing cubes, right?
Oh yeah. And I am a huge, huge fan of packing cubes. I've tested out probably about 5 different brands of packing cubes. And just when you think you've got a great solution, and I'm trying to think, I think it was either, and I don't know if they're listeners, it was either Becky Picara or, well, and I hope she's a listener. I think we've had her on, or if not, we will. We've been talking about that. Or Pat and Mike. I think her Twitter handle is Pat Mike L. One of those two or both really highlighted packing cubes, I don't know, so many years ago, because they were going to multiple destinations and they were just like, oh, I just take the orange out in this location and then I've got everything I need. And I just really fell in love with that concept because before our daughter was born, we traveled fast. I think my first blog or my wife and my first blog was called Quick City Visits because we'd go someplace for like 80 hours on the ground and then move on to the next. And so the packing cube idea made it so much easier. Now it works even better and the technology has just gotten better and better. It used to be you just kind of pack a cube and then you zip it up and then you just kind of shove it in. Now they have compression cubes. So you pack the cube, not too full, like you might with the ones that don't compress, and then you compress them, and that builds in a little bit of extra space. It might not do the best in the main, you know, the center of mass, but you get a little bit of room at the tops and the bottoms that allows you to get a little bit more into the suitcase.
Yeah, just definitely something to consider if you aren't using them now, or, you know, I would agree with you. Some of the compression models of the ones that are out there can definitely save some space, right? Or recover some space is probably the better way to say it.
Yeah. And, you know, it might be the difference of just being able to, like, you know, slide a belt in between the cases or whatever you want to sort of do with the packing cubes to kind of leverage that extra space. I've tried a couple of different compression cubes, and Vasco compression packing cubes are the ones that I've found to be the best. They feel like they've got a better quality. They're easier to kind of do the compression zip. We'll include a link in the show notes for those as well. None of the links that we provide are going to have any sort of affiliateness or anything. Just providing them as a service.
Just informational. So no kickback to you, huh, Trevor?
No. That wouldn't be right.
I would say the only thing to kind of round us out for accessories, now that we've kind of talked about most of it, is I bring up one thing and something that's near and dear to my heart, at least when I make a trip to a Waldorf Astoria hotel. And that's just because I think, as we may have mentioned previously, I am a big fan of Aesop toiletry products. This is a brand that is from Down Under. They make wonderful soaps and shampoos and conditioners, and especially a lovely citrus-scented lotion, which is ungodly expensive if you were to buy it at the store, believe it or not. You can buy a bottle of this, a relatively large bottle, but you know, if you wanted to use your Saks credit, you'd need a couple of years' worth to pay for this, because I think they're about $200 a bottle or something, which is at least 2 years worth of gift cards. So whenever I do go to a Waldorf Astoria hotel and I notice that there are these lovely bottles sitting by the sink that have this beautifully scented lotion, I do make it a point to go to my local Walmart or Amazon and pick up some toiletry bottles that can be refilled and make sure to fill them up. I know this will make me sound very cheap and penny pinching, but you know what? I don't care, because I smell great.
And as not a moisturizer aficionado, I have to say that moisturizer is just wonderful. It has that wonderful citrus smell. We were at the Waldorf Astoria, DC for a concert, and we brought some toiletry bottles. Unfortunately, the bottles by the side of the sink were like half empty or more, and so we didn't get that many. I did bring some for you as I appreciate
the gift.
As you know. But I really did think I think they're probably the best of the toiletries out of, like, you know, really the Park Hyatt, the St. Regis, and the Waldorf.
You know, especially if you're going to some of these high-end hotels that have these kind of high-end toiletries, it's nice. And of course, now that we're all very eco-friendly, right, they don't provide individual bottles of them anymore. And I do miss that, you know. And oftentimes, you know, having a couple of your own toiletry bottles, that'll basically give you a chance to bring home, have a little bit of an ongoing memory of some of these places, because you can still use some of the lovely shampoo or lotions or other things that are from there.
You know, I was going to get on a soapbox about the large toiletries that aren't single use, but you just said so eloquently about the memory of the stay and everything. I don't want to like detract from that. Let's move on to our next category.
Let's go.
Okay. Clothes. Clothes is an interesting one, right? Some people have like entire wardrobes of travel clothes versus like normal clothes. Others sort of just integrate their clothing across everything. I think for me, if it's not like, you know, formal suits sort of thing, I think anything in my closet can fly, even a suit. I prefer not to fly in suits nowadays, but where do you stand on that?
I'll definitely share one of my tips. So there's a couple of nuggets of knowledge that I'd like to share with our listeners. One of them is I usually wear a shirt with the front pocket. Whether that be, you know, and they make t-shirts with front pockets, and they have shirts, you know, they have button-up shirts with front pockets and polos. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a particular style of shirt, but I really like the ability to have, you know, and I'm still a fan of boarding passes because I don't have to worry about battery power or screen brightness or something like that. So I like the place where I can stick a boarding pass or my headphones or, you know, or anything that's kind of small, because it's a lot more easy, especially if you're sitting down in your airplane seat, to pull something out of your shirt pocket than it is your side pockets, especially if you're unfortunately dun-dun-dun in coach and, you know, there's somebody sitting next to you that you don't know very well. It's a lot easier to pull that out. So that's one of the things that I tend to think about or sweat the small details when I'm traveling. The other thing that I wanted to mention was I cannot tell you how many times I have made the mistake of buying new shoes and taking them on a trip with me. I have done that I think I do that every couple of years, and I realize, why have I not learned this lesson yet? That you really don't want to be testing out shoes and footwear on a trip, because that is absolutely the worst time to do it. So I've had the wrong footwear many, many times and had to, I mean, the fortunate thing is I found some really great pairs of shoes on vacation a couple of times because I've done this exact thing and realized, this was not the right decision, and subsequently made a shopping trip and bought some appropriate footwear. And that has helped me out quite a bit. So I would say that's another thing to keep an eye on.
I love that tip. And I never try to break in new shoes because my feet are a little bit bigger than most other countries like to have. And so I've avoided that problem. I've avoided that problem to the point where I've had one pair of shoes break on me, or kind of like the flap go, you know, the leather sole go, because I didn't want to break in a new pair going on a trip. It doesn't always work out either way.
I will probably still make that mistake, but I think by mentioning it on this podcast, maybe I'll remind myself not to do that.
There you go. Next time you're traveling with new shoes, just listen to this episode. So I used to do like a bunch of random clothes that I'd try to do for travel. I tried Prana. I tried some, Costco always has kind of rotating kind of travel type clothes, comfortable pants that breathe, that sort of thing. I found that some of the Costco shirts, t-shirts, I've got some Eddie Bauers that worked out really, really well that I have never seen again, which is unfortunate. But a friend of mine, Ian, had turned me on to Lululemon, and I have just become a fanboy. I'm planning my current trip, and I think we're going for, I think, 8 nights, and I think I've got 7 Lululemon golf shirts, and I've got a Notre Dame golf shirt because the national championship. This will come out after the national championship game, but I can tell you I'll be wearing a green Notre Dame shirt, a golf shirt, on the day watching the championship. And hopefully when this comes out, we'll all be celebrating the fact that Notre Dame has once again gotten a championship, although it'll be tough, really tough against Ohio. But my point being is that the vast majority of my travel wardrobe is now Lululemon. They have great technology in the shirts that kind of avoid a little bit of the absorption of smell. They don't wrinkle. They generally recover pretty well. And what I found is a lot of Amex offers. So Amex, I feel like on some of the cards, and if you use card pointers, which I am a huge, huge advocate for, I did a lifetime membership with card pointers, and it has just paid dividends and dividends and dividends. I mean, maybe dividends is a small word for the amount of value that I've gotten out of it. But you buy like a $100 gift card on Lululemon, you get the physical gift card, you get the $10 back from Amex, and then you just rinse and repeat. And then sometimes they have multipliers as well. And so you buy the shirts on clearance at like, $60, which is still a lot for a golf shirt, I think. Maybe I'm old fashioned, but you can get a good value when you stack all these different things. And they're usually pretty high up in the portals. American likes to put them somewhere between 5 and 9X most of the time.
Yeah, I was skeptical when you mentioned that's the brand that you're shopping at, that particular brand. I was like, really? That's where you're going to get your clothes from? And I've seen you very much get converted and really have it be your go-to. So I have not been converted. I will probably not be in the same camp, but at the same time, it's working for you. So I think definitely worth taking a look at some of these travel wear brands that have kind of a design to be worn a little bit more frequently. And especially, when you're traveling, it is nice to be able to pack a little lighter. And part of that includes being able to, maybe rewear a piece of clothing now and again. Because, honestly, if you had to have one piece of clothing for every day, sometimes that can be very, very hard.
The one thing I'll say, just because I know that Lululemon has a reputation of athleisure, they have ABC pants that look completely normal. I mean, they're essentially just chinos, except that they have some stretch and they're just, in my opinion, just a little bit more comfortable than if you got a pair of Polo Ralph Lauren chinos, a little bit more breathable, that sort of thing.
So, it might be good to move on to our next category, which I think is something that is very interesting, has a lot of, I think, tips and tricks and kind of aspects for your average traveler, especially if you're doing any kind of international roaming. And that's, what do you do about your cell phone, especially when you're in another country? Because nowadays, there's a lot of options, right? There's a lot of ways you can do things. And I definitely think there's some situations where you want to do one thing and another situation where you might want to do something else. Would you agree, Trevor?
Absolutely. And I have to admit, I'm not quite in the dark ages. I used to do the you buy a SIM in whatever country that you landed in and you put it into your old GSM phone and you hoped everything worked out well. And then when Google Fi and T-Mobile came out, I think Google Fi was probably first, I just said, you know what? I'm not going to bother with any of that. I'm going to pay the premium. I'm going to have Google Fi wherever I land. It's just going to work. Maybe T-Mobile works. Maybe it doesn't. I'm kind of excited to test out whether the new iPhone 16 T-Mobile works better than my old iPhone 12 that never worked overseas. But I'm behind the times because you found new things.
I did. And you're right, because there was a time where, going and buying a SIM from a provider, you know, at the airport and, you know, having the guy like get the paper clip out and pop out your SIM and swap it out. And then you have to figure out where am I putting this little tiny thing that's going to get lost very immediately? Because that's half the other battle, right? Where do you store your actual SIM that you're going to need to put back in there later? But it's funny, the world has changed, you know, and you're right. There's Google Fi, which I would almost say is now a little bit of a generation behind because there's a lot of different options. There's T-Mobile, which, you know, they're just giving you for free, most of the T-Mobile customers, a lot of international roaming. Mind you, at the very slow and excruciatingly slow rate of like 3G or something like that in most countries, if not 2G, which, hey, better than nothing. You know, you can at least get your text messages and you can make phone calls generally at not exorbitant prices, which is why T-Mobile is my carrier, you know, and it's your carrier too. But really, things have changed. You know, now with most people having eSIM capable phones, there's like a ton of services out there. And I think if you recall our guys trip that we just did for your birthday a couple months ago, I was very quick to realize, you know, I need to stop relying on the free service I get from T-Mobile, because there was a time where I needed some internet access because it was affecting the quality of our trip, not being able to find stuff easily. And I said, you know what? It's worth like a couple bucks, like $3 or $4 or $5. Just get an eSIM provider pass for a little bit, you know, and that's what I did. I bought it. It was just, I think it was like 300 megs or 500 megs or some reasonably small amount of data coverage. And that made a huge difference in the quality of our trip, because we were able to find a great place to have dinner, a wonderful meal, you know, and find the place using Google Maps and everything very easily without, you know, having to wait for the phone to catch up and load maps and things like that. And that made a huge difference. So I would say the biggest thing I think is this idea of the eSIM provider, which there are just a multitude of out there. I don't necessarily want to advocate for one in particular because there's so many of them. I think there's probably a lot of good options. And we don't have anything that we're promoting or being paid to talk about. But I think I use a service called Nomad and it worked great. One of the things you do have to do typically is have a unlocked phone. And even if you're under contract, you can usually talk to your phone carrier and say, hey, I'm going to Europe. Hey, I'm going to Asia or whatever. Can you temporarily unlock my phone for a couple of months so I can use an eSIM provider? They will typically do that. So that's something to just keep in mind out.
And that's even if you're still paying the phone off, huh?
That's right. My understanding is you just, you know, you dial your customer service or even, you know, chat them up and see if they'll do that for you. Because I think most carriers will do that. I can't say in all cases, but for the most part. Or, you know, worst case scenario, you know, like you said, have an older phone that you haven't turned in. That's another option you could use. I do want to, before we move on to another topic under this cell phone international roaming, I did want to mention very briefly, something that I haven't tested yet, but I'm really excited about because I learned about another one of these eSIM providers. They're called GigSky, and they actually have a deal, I think, with the U.S. Bank Altitude Connect card where you can get a free plan or something that's kind of bundled in with the annual fee there. But the interesting about them is they're the first one I've ever heard of that actually have a deal with Cellular at Sea. And I don't know if you know what Cellular at Sea is, but it's the phone provider that most of the major cruise lines use to provide cell phone access while you're sailing at sea out in the middle of the ocean. And that's really cool because, you know, rather than paying the cruise line for internet access, you can get a data package with this carrier GigSky using that Cellular at Sea service. And that can potentially be a big savings. Now, mind you, it's not going to be unlimited. You probably don't want to use it to be watching YouTube and you're streaming in Netflix and stuff. But hey, if you just need to be able to do like web browsing, check your email, do your social media, and be able to iMessage and chat and things like that, it sounds pretty amazing. And I have already bought a package for an upcoming cruise in a month or so.
And that's different than the Starlink that's provided for the Wi-Fi? Or does everything kind of route through some sort of satellite provider?
It probably does ultimately route through a provider, but the person selling it is using that Cellular at Sea network instead of Starlink. And I think what that's going to mean is the big difference is your typical cruise line is going to charge you somewhere upwards of, you know, $25, $30 a day for internet access, right? This package, you could potentially get a week's worth of, let's say I bought like a gigabyte worth of data to use over a 7-day period, and it cost me less than $25. So less than one day what I would have had to pay the cruise line for that one week. Mind you, it's capped. It's only 1 gigabyte. Right. So it's usage based. So I'm not going to be watching full length movies throughout that week. But, you know, I think for what I'm looking for access for, I think it's going to work out great. I'll definitely report back, hopefully at a future trip report on Travel Stories about how that cruise went.
Awesome. Awesome. Just make sure you're not streaming Titanic.
It's probably not the best. Yeah, it's probably not the best movie to be watching on a cruise. That being said, I think there's probably one other thing that we wanted to talk about. I think that's flight passes. You were on a flight together. Actually, I think that was also that birthday trip, wasn't it?
It was, and it's interesting. So I'm on this old, antiquated magenta minimum. Like, I know they had a Magenta Max. I was definitely not on that. Like, I don't get free Netflix or any of that other stuff. And we found that I don't even get the flight passes for my T-Mobile account, but you do. Tell us about what you get.
And I'm on a pretty old, I'm on like a Simply Something plan that's probably even older than, I think that's before they went to colors. But I do get them. And a lot, I think most T-Mobile subscribers will get these flight passes. So if you are a T-Mobile person, definitely check and make sure you go a little bit deeper into that Wi-Fi portal page when you get on American Airlines or Alaska or Delta or one of these other carriers that have flight passes. Because you will find that there is a part of the page, which is sometimes hidden, which says, use your free passes. And you'll be able to find a section where, as a T-Mobile customer, I think on Alaska, on American, on, I'm trying to think what other airlines, United, you know, you should be able to find a way to be able to log in and use either a flight pass for 1 hour for free on every flight, or you typically are going to get 4 passes for the entire flight to use throughout the year. And those are kind of incredible fringe benefit. Can make the time go by very quickly. And one other quick trick or tip for our listeners is that typically you need to have a mobile phone to do this. You need to have your actual iPhone or your Android device or whatever. But believe it or not, there's an actually relatively quick hack if you're using Chrome or Edge as your main internet browser on your laptop or Surface or tablet or whatever that isn't a mobile device. You can easily hit F12 and go into the developer toolkit and turn on mobile emulation where your browser will act like it's a mobile browser. And that's enough to trick the system into allowing you to put in your credentials for your phone line so you can use that flight pass on a laptop computer. So that's something, I don't want to go into all the details. You could probably go on Reddit, look that up or Google it and find the trick very easily, but just realize that you don't necessarily have to spend that flight pass on your phone. You could potentially do that on an actual laptop, get some work done, do a whole bunch of emails, do a whole bunch of other things, which potentially could be even more productive than just using it on your phone.
That's a huge one. That's absolutely a huge one. I didn't know that until you told me that on that October trip. And I'm excited to try it again in a few days.
Yeah, I mean, it opens up quite a bit of extra opportunities, right?
Absolutely. And I love how you segued us right into our last topic, technology, our everyday carry technology. Where do we want to start off here, Tom?
One of the areas of technology, especially that's changed a lot, and especially the kind of travel space, is some of the technology you carry around to keep everything charged, keep all your batteries at 100%. Because that was very different, I think, even just a couple of years ago. I think 4 or 5 years ago, you know, I remember when you were doing the Saverosity podcast and you were giving away USB chargers that were like these kind of little like a lifesaver sticks worth of battery and thinking, oh, this is the coolest thing. And then I used it and I was like, this charged my phone like 10%.
You know? In all fairness, they had flashlights too.
Oh, they had flashlights. It was also a flashlight. Yes. Well, and at the time that would be the main giveaway you'd get at a trade show or the swag that you'd get attending a meeting or something like that. And it's funny, like that was very acceptable at the time, right? In other words, like when you had these kind of technology of what was available to you to be able to charge your devices or your phone, I mean, getting 10% of extra battery life was like, oh, that's amazing. That's great.
And it was probably a whole lot more than 10% of the battery life back then.
Yeah. Yeah. But things have changed, right? There really has been an kind of an arms race where the battery technology and the charging technology has gotten a lot better.
It really has. But it means that you've got to carry much heavier packs is the problem. But you can also charge much more quickly in some cases if you get that gallium nitride or nitrite, I think it is, adapters and, you know, what you plug into the wall. And I think that's the really interesting piece there. I remember when I was seeing that GaN technology applied to other things 10, 15 years ago. And so to be able to hold it in our hands, I've got a combination international adapter and USB charger. So it's got one plug for like, you know, regular AC plug, American style. It's got the adapter for whatever international places you go to. And it's got, I think, two USB-C and then like two or three USB-A. And that thing charges quickly, astonishingly quickly.
I saw that and I was like very skeptical at first. I was like, what is this dinky thing that Trevor has? And I think I realized a little later, I was like, oh, wait one second. This is actually something that can charge at the full 45 watts of power, you know, from a current perspective. And that's actually a huge deal because that's enough power to actually charge a laptop, which I carry one of those things around typically as my main laptop charger, which is great because it's serving two or three purposes. It's providing me the ability to access different plugs in other countries and has a ability to plug in another device, plus all these USB charging and some of them at very high current to be able to charge, you know, your phone at high capacity or be able to do a laptop, which is immense, right? Because suddenly you're not carrying a separate laptop charger, separate phone charger, a power adapter brick, you know, international adapter brick. It's all one device. And that really changes the game quite a bit. So I definitely would recommend you look at these things because they can be extremely useful.
You know, the thing that cracks me up though, or maybe just astonishes me, is also that you carry a battery pack that you could theoretically charge your laptop or run your laptop off of.
Oh, I absolutely can. Yes.
And I think that's another aspect. So part of it is how can we charge things more quickly? But the other side is how can we keep things going? And now I'm not always as big on carrying a heavy battery pack like you do, but I think there's always a place for it, you know, in one side or another. Nowadays, I can't remember where the heck I got it, but I got almost the same exact size that you and I were talking about that old flashlight.
Lifesaver size.
But it's got so much more power in it now than the old things. And so like I could easily get 15, 20%, maybe even 25, 30% for an iPhone 16 out of that Lifesaver size now. And for me, I feel like that's enough because of the plentifulness of power. But I mean, I think you make a lot of great points with Anker. And what's the other brand that you use?
So Anker's a pretty good one. I mean, I bought some stuff from, I think, a Hong Kong brand called Momax. There's another Chinese brand called Basis that also sells some of these chargers. I have products from a lot of these, and you can find these on Amazon. So I don't know how many people know the Anker brand, but you know they really do have this kind of bulletproof reputation for being, you know, really great at their products, very reliable, and you know having extraordinarily high quality and being able to really trust them not to, you know, have inexpensive China crap, basically. It's good stuff. And I would definitely take a look at some of these because, you know, these chargers and adapters, if you've got something that's 4 or 5 years old, it probably behooves you to take a look at what's new out there because the changes in technology, especially with some of the GaN chargers and stuff, you know, you can buy these, like you mentioned, the heavier battery bricks or whatever. They may weigh a bit, but you know what? They can charge your phone like 2 or 3 times over or charge a full laptop. And that's huge. I think that makes a big difference. And definitely something that's worth keeping in your kit for everyday carry.
Yeah, I love that tip. And the other thing I'll just add is Costco nowadays is carrying Anker, both battery packs and not the travel adapters, but like, you know, at least a US adapter that are GaN based or at least utilize GaN technology. And I see them often discounted or on clearance occasionally. So don't just look at Amazon. If you've got a little bit of time on your horizon and you're a Costco fan, keep an eye out. You might find a better deal that way. I know that I picked mine up. We picked up a 2-pack for probably $10 off, which is, you know, about what you'd see if it went clearance as well. So a lot of opportunity there, whether you're looking at Amazon sales. I assume Anker goes direct nowadays. Not that I've ever bought directly from them, but, you know, Costco and other sellers pretty regularly have deals.
Yep. You know, another piece of tech that I know I've used and you've been actually a beneficiary of on some cruises is Travel Router. Now, the interesting thing about Travel Routers is they're going on the restricted list for some cruises recently. So you may or may not be able to continue to be bringing these on certain cruises, but they're really helpful for cruises in particular because it's a way to be able to share an internet plan so that you could have potentially several phones or several laptops using them. That's something to look out for. I know I bought one from a company called TP-Link that worked out really well for us, you know, on various cruises that we had. In fact, I think you realized that I was in your vicinity, right? Because I happened to be, had my man purse on me with the travel router hooked up to one of these very large battery packs, which is one of the reasons why I carry that battery pack around. See how I'm tying in the whole episode together. Anyway, it's funny because Trevor happened to suddenly get all these alerts on his phone. He's like, oh, wait, I'm in Wi-Fi range. Oh, I guess that must be TK's close by. I was carrying this travel router around with me, and I was essentially a mobile internet cafe at that point, which was kind of fun.
I remember that. I'm sitting at a slot machine, and I start getting ding, 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 ding on my phone. And I'm like, okay, where's TK
jackpot,
now?
Jackpot.
Looking around, where's TK now?
And of course, I was in the casino.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, of course. I mean, where else would you be? There was actually a separate time where I was looking for you because, like, so the way we cruise, just for our listeners, we all go to dinner together, and then I would bring my family up to the room, and we'd get our daughter to bed, and then I'd come back down and go to the casino like a degenerate that I am. And what I'd do is I'd get into the casino and I'd just look at my phone to see where the Wi-Fi is and if the signal was getting stronger or not. And then I'd use that as a way to find Tom.
Well, that may be a thing of the past. You know, there's still some good reasons to have those travel routers, you know, because, you know, if you carry around, let's say if you want to be able to stream from a Roku or Fire Stick or something, and you want to be able to configure some of those things, sometimes having a travel router will make that easier. Or, you know, it can add another layer, or if you want to embed a VPN or something into that device, those are some other reasons to carry a travel router. But those are becoming a little bit more edge and fringe as kind of time goes on. And honestly, you know, it could very well be that with things like the eSIM provider we mentioned a minute ago, the GigSky, I may be changing up my internet strategy on cruise ships going forward.
Well, you know what they say, adapt or die. I mean, I hate to say it, but like, it's always adapting. It's always kind of jumping to the next thing. I mean, in anything travel that we've said, just like we used to do a lot of American, then American kind of wasn't great. Then, you know, you had the pandemic and you saw the opportunity on the cruising side and you pivoted that way. It's always adapt or die. And you found an alternative with this GigSky, which I think is exciting to explore. You also mentioned, though, in passing, that these GAN, what about the GAN chargers might also be a restricted item for cruising?
That's a good point. Yeah, I may have to change up my kit when I go on my next cruise because I think Royal Caribbean has kind of changed their restricted items policy. I know, strangely enough, surge protectors have been on that policy for forever. But now they're including things like these travel adapters that have universal plugs on them, you know, the ones where you can plug in other AC devices. Like the travel adapter that you and I are, the little power bricks that we're talking about that have not only the USB charging capability, but the ability to charge, you know, basically a US 2 or 3 prong outlet device directly into the adapter, which, you know, of course makes sense because, you know, you may be trying to change the prong configuration for a Euro outlet or a UK outlet or a South American outlet or whatever. But in this case, for whatever reason, I think they're seeing it as a fire risk because of the type of electrical systems on cruise ships. So this may very well be on the restricted list for your upcoming cruise. So definitely check those. And so I may be changing my kit up a little and having to go back to kind of the multi-outlet USB adapter kind of chargers that were what I used to use before using the multi-USB outlet international adapter bricks. And just something to keep out for because, you know, again, as Trevor mentioned, things keep changing. You have to keep iterating because people change the rules and change things on you all the time. So it's important to keep up and continue to iterate your everyday carry.
Yeah, you got to keep following that bouncing ball. Speaking of that, I think the last item that you wanted to talk through is probably the Uber technology, right? We've already talked about mobile devices, but laptops, tablets.
And this is a very personal decision because, you know, I think we are not on the same team on this one usually.
No, we are not.
So I tend to carry around a thin and light laptop. So I happen to have a Dell XPS, which has, strangely enough, been in the news because Dell has stopped selling this line of brand. They're going to no longer sell XPS laptops. They're going kind of like to the Apple model of Dell Pro and Dell Max or Pro Max or something. But I'm usually team laptop. And mainly it's because I do like a good keyboard. I don't know. It's just familiar to me. So it's something. And, you know, the thin and light laptops of this day and age, they have excellent battery life. The screens are pretty good. The performance is pretty good. It meets my requirements.
And I'm in team tablet. So it's really funny because I'm recording this, for example, right now on a desktop. I love the desktop idea when I'm home, but the laptop approach just seems too small for me. And it's ironic because I know you would say the tablet is even smaller, but I pay a less penalty on the weight and on the volume that I've got to put to have that in my bag. I actually just recently used my Dell credits to buy an external monitor to be able to have two monitors for my tablet. I haven't tested it out yet. I need to, but it's funny because I brought that extra monitor on a trip in December and I just didn't feel like I needed to do it. I didn't feel like I needed to use it.
You didn't get the use out of it, huh?
I didn't. And so I don't even know if I want to pay the penalty to have the extra monitor. The tablet I just find to be so much more useful. I can do so much on my phone already. The tablet just bridges the gap because I'm not trying to do heavy work. I'm not trying to, you know, I'll build PowerPoint slides, but I'm not trying to do, you know, I'm not trying to write a novel. I can write a blog post or something, write notes for, you know, a trip or that sort of thing, but I'm not going heavy anything. And even with web browsing, I feel like anything I can do on the tablet, you know, anything I could do on a on an XPS like you have, I could do on the tablet, on the Surface tablet. And the added bonus is obviously the thinness, the touchscreen, the pen. I even have a little mouse that came with the kit. It just all works out really so well for me. And really, that smaller size just makes a big difference.
I tried out the Surface for a little while. I had that as kind of my travel laptop, quote unquote, for a while. And I used to actually bring an iPad around quite frequently. But, you know, it's funny, as time has gone on, yeah, I think some of my preferences for technology has changed too. I've started to use my phones more as the quality and capabilities of the phones have gotten better and better. And, you know, the things you can download to it and things you can watch from it, you know, those have all gotten better. I can store my YouTube videos and my Netflix shows and my other kinds of streaming media and save those straight to my phone so that I can watch them later. And I got, of course, I have my favorite podcasts like Travel Stories that I can listen to. And so I find that I started using my tablet less, and I liked having the laptop because I hate the kind of keyboards that usually came with the Surface. At least, you know, I know they're still pretty good, but they're just slightly less good compared to an actual laptop keyboard. And I didn't really use the pen or the touchscreen capability. So that's why I gravitated probably more toward the laptops. And for everything else, I've got my phones.
I think the only thing that the tablet falls short on for me is the amount of times that you'll hand me your laptop or you'll lift your laptop to like put it someplace to be able to get a meal on a plane or whatever, and you just lift it up by where the keyboard is. That's what I miss. I have to fold the Surface and then just set it aside. Not a huge difference, but I mean, it's just a different way to operate. And I think that for me, that's the one thing that I'm really missing. I think the performance is the same for the two.
Nowadays, I think you're probably right. There really is less of a difference there.
It's more form and fit.
Yeah, it's a form factor that you're choosing rather than compromising performance or things like that, where that was probably more the case, you know, 10 years ago.
But the other side, I think, is remember, if we're talking buying from Dell, I don't even know if Dell still sells Surfaces. I mean, I feel like they change what they sell every few months. But
it's hard to keep track.
You know, you're also limited, and which is probably a vote in your case, is you can only go about $600, right? So let's say you have three or more business platinums. The best you can do is split payment across three. And so you can get a pretty decent laptop for $600. I'm not sure that you're going to get a Surface for $600.
Yeah. And it's getting a little harder. I think the price points have changed a little bit, where I think to get a really decent laptop, you know, it used to be you could, you know, the one I'm using right now to record on, that was probably only, I mean, it was on sale maybe $698, $700. And that was a heck of a deal. But I think the product that I got at that price point was great. But right now, if I were to buy a laptop, I'd probably spend a little bit more and spend on some of these like Lunar Lake and I think what Meteor Lake or what's coming out later. Some of these Intel platforms that are coming out, they're just so much better. They finally caught up with Apple on some of the technology with things like battery life and power efficiency. And I think that now you can buy a laptop at those price points that are kind of the above $1,000 and get like 10 hours of battery life or even better, which is kind of ridiculous.
Well, you know what? When they come out with Martian Lake, I'll seriously give it a thought.
Okay.
So wrapping up, we went a whole lot longer than I think we thought about it.
I thought this was going to be a quick episode.
I agree. But I think what's clear is that we're very passionate about a lot of this. We're passionate about what is in our gear, what we're willing to drag pretty much around the world.
Multiple times.
And I think that the one area that I just wanted to add a little bit to, and I know you don't really have a lot of experience to this, but now traveling with a toddler, we have added to our kit. I got this 10th or 9th generation iPad, 10 point something inch, first iPad that we've bought in ages for $199 at Costco. Might still find it someplace, you know, keep an eye out for that. But we got that for our daughter. We'd been avoiding the screen forever. And good friends of ours had recommended, hey, there's some educational apps on there that can be really helpful. And so we embraced it for Christmas as a Christmas present. And we're excited to take that on our first trip, which we'll be taking probably while this episode's getting posted. And so we'll be testing that one out. But for the parents among us, among our listeners, there are a lot of small little things that you can do that you can pop into your bag that can entertain. I've found stickers, reusable stickers. My wife found those are really good for, like, if you're flying in economy or close to the window, that seems to entertain our daughter a whole lot. They've got little fidget devices. And then as kids get older, there are some of these flashcards that can be really small. I mean, they could be like, you know, 1.5 inches by like 3 inches for like compound words and that sort of thing. And we find that those little things seem to make a big difference for our daughter to get through some of these trips. Probably we're lucky because she's been traveling since she was, I don't know, not even 2 months old. And so she's comfortable on a plane, period. But you still need some sort of things to entertain. And so I think there's a lot of those small little educational related things and then just the random little fidgets and stuff that can really buy you a couple of minutes here, a couple of minutes there, sometimes even a half hour, even before you go to the tablet. But we're going to see how the tablet goes. All this stuff doesn't add that much to the space and the weight, which I think is really exciting. If any of our listeners have thoughts, I would love to hear any suggestions, all suggestions. Because this is an area that I feel like, as a father of a 3-year-old, I still think of myself as a new dad. And I feel like it's always adapting. It's always kind of chasing that bouncing ball of trying to figure out, okay, is this going to work this time? Is this going to work this time? And so definitely share any experiences that you have. And I'll continue to try to share the experiences that I have on this podcast and in the various forums that we do have comments and the Slack group.
Yeah, we love feedback on this kind of stuff. And I got to tell you, you know, I do some people watching, you know, when I'm in the airport lounge and I see what people have and see if it's working for them. And I love to hear about people's tips and tricks. And honestly, I'm a sucker for them when it comes to YouTube or Twitter or whatever, you know, somebody's got some kind of fun tip or hack or trick. I will find that more and more they're kind of dumb. So to be fair. But then maybe that's my getting older and being a little bit more cynical. But at the same time, doesn't stop me from wanting to watch and see if they've got something for me. And I also think that we've got great listeners who have just tremendous knowledge and experience. And I love learning new things and getting better because, you know, I have a little bit of pride in thinking I'm a pretty good traveler overall. And you get there by learning new things and finding new ways to do things that enrich your life and give you a better quality product when it comes to, you know, the kind of trip or vacation you're having.
So well said. So well said. And I'll just say, I'm fairly certain that our listeners aren't going to come with some of the clickbaity stuff that gets you to click on YouTube that that may not be the most sensical thing.
The top 10 tricks that saved my life.
So the number one top 10 things that saved your life, again, adapter, international adapter. Absolutely. Actually, that's a good one. It's probably more like duct tape. Although, okay, I'm going to go on a little tangent before we close out.
Okay, fine.
When I was working in Ghana, I had trainers that would go to places like Chad. They'd be in Afghanistan. The embassy had these Connex boxes that were essentially hotel rooms or lodging rooms, and they called them the dog kennels. And so some of these guys were hardened guys doing law enforcement of various forms and training international law enforcement people in so many different ways. And I'm chatting with one of our guys, and he's like, oh yeah, you go to Chad and you bring like 5 rolls of duct tape and you tape yourself into your hotel room every day. You tape the windows, you tape the door frame, because otherwise you're going to wake up with some sort of insect on you that you don't even know what the heck it is. And who knows whether it's going to kill you or not. And so just the concept of traveling Like, you know, we're traveling, we're talking about battery packs. They're talking about just very basics like chlorine tablets and duct tape.
I thought you were going to cover up the smoke detector. You could smoke in the restroom or something.
I'm not sure that they had smoke detectors in those in their lodging. But my point is, you know, everybody travels differently and everybody's everyday carry is going to probably be different. And we didn't even talk about medications or any of that stuff that, I mean, we are not a medical podcast, but I will say I do have either a Cipro or a Cephalexin prescription or amoxicillin prescription that we keep with us and prednisone, because you never know what's going to happen. And if you get into a situation where you get deli belly or something, you need to be able to cover yourself. And that's not medical advice. That's just the advice that I've gotten from travel doctors myself. It's all these different things that you just think about. When you travel overseas, in some cases, you're going to places that you might never have been. In some cases, you might be going a little bit more in the bush, as I think they say down in, is that Australia or is that Africa or is it both?
Probably both. But yeah, I definitely keep my CVS in a little bag. Band-Aids, some Imodium, definitely some various cold and headache remedies. You want to have some basics because, you know, it makes more sense just to carry a couple of those around with you just so that you don't have to make that midnight run to the pharmacy in a country you don't know, because, you know, it's much better to have a couple of key things in your carry-on.
And a couple of points on that. We can't say, hey, have this without putting the caveat that some countries won't let you. Go into Japan, you might get caught with a NyQuil and that could be really bad for you. In the old days, Stefan, and I always get Stefan's last name, Krasinski, I think. I always get that wrong and I apologize, Stefan, if you're listening. Is it Krakowski?
I don't know.
Oh, gosh.
Now you got me wondering.
Okay. Rapid Travel Chai. Stefan, I'm sorry if I'm sorry about your last name.
If we both got it wrong, I don't know.
But Stefan used to do a really great, it was like 101 things from traveling the world. And he would put a slide up back in the days that we probably didn't have as good connectivity of what ibuprofen was, like the medical or like the chemical definition of it. Was because you could go and you could say, hey, I need a Tylenol, and you could be in Germany and they're like, yeah, I don't know what the heck that is. And so being able to translate it into something that other people in other countries can understand, to be able to know that you're getting, let's say, ibuprofen versus aspirin or versus Tylenol. You don't really have that concern nowadays because you've got Google Translate and we've got the internet in our hands. But you know, it's that sort of thing where international travel has just changed so much over time. And it's always that bouncing ball and just always understanding what you need to do to be prepared.
Which is, you know, part of having everyday carry, you know, and you carry those things that you're going to need to be prepared. You know, it's kind of that Boy Scout mentality, right? You know, have what you need. I never was a Boy Scout, but, you know, I definitely want to have the stuff that I need with me when I need it, when I'm traveling.
I made it to Cub Scouts, so we'll just call it a Boy Scout mentality there on both of our parts then. Well, that's the show. Thanks for joining us. And we hope you enjoyed listening.
If you've enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a Milenomics Patreon member and get access to even more in-depth miles, points, and travel content.
Until then, we hope your next story is a travel story.